Hello, everyone. It's good to see all of you. For some of you, it's twice this week. It was great to see some of you yesterday for our Q&A call. Give everyone another half a minute here to get in. If you notice my background is different, it's because I'm hiding in the upstairs of my in-laws' house. There's work being done on my bathroom, and so I had to run away yesterday and today. All right. So, we've got a really juicy call today. I think it's a really juicy call. We're going to be diving into the second part of energetics. And of course, you know, our very first call in Sacred Depths was about energetics, but every call that we've had, every session that we've had, every Q&A that we've had, the energetics is always a piece of it. Energetics are a piece of every skill and every technique and all the ways that we show up. Today, we're gonna really focus our entire session and go into some even more advanced territory around energetics. But before we do, I'd love to hear from some of you. Since we began Sacred Depths, what have you been noticing and learning about energetics? What have you been noticing and learning about energetics? What's really been sticking with you? How has your attention to energetics maybe shifted or impacted your client sessions or any of your other relationships? What have you been seeing and noticing? Happy to hear in the chat, but I'd love to also hear some voices. So Carlita's saying it's foundational, the most important thing. Yes, agree 100%. Because it fosters trust. Yes. Who else who'd like to share? Jamie, do you have your hand raised or did you just?
I'm trying to. Yeah. I'm just really present to my own energetics, stepping into or within the coaching session when I am getting into my head versus when I'm dropping into my intuition and my presence, and that shifts me and then opens up the possibility. And I'm just more and more grateful to be trusting, you know, very much in the space that trust is foundational as well, and that I'm seeing the results.
I love that. I love that you're remembering to drop in. And I love, it sounds like you're literally seeing as you do that, the energy shift and the container shift and the impact of mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Libby.
I've been pondering this lately because I'm writing something on it regarding my own shifts in life with my paradigm shifts. And I'm finding that when words and energy conflict, the energy will always win. Yes. Because authentic love is carried by energy. It's not carried through words. You can use words that that communicate love, but it can be a faux love. And I was raised in an environment where words were given predominance and energy was denied, but you can still always tell. And even as a kid, kids can tell when their parents are using loving words, but the energy is saying something else. And love is what transforms, and energy doesn't lie.
Energy doesn't lie. I'm so glad that you're bringing this into the conversation. It's so true. Words, I'm a wordsmith. I love words, but words really are meaningless without the energy behind them.
Yeah.
Beautiful. I'm so glad that that's becoming more and more aware and that you brought that in. Giuseppe.
Hi, Joanna. Well, for me, the biggest shift has been really paying always close attention to not being attached to any outcome. And this has been really transformational for me. And I've seen that this really opens up a lot of possibilities that wouldn't exist otherwise. I mean, if we have something in mind when we start a conversation, we tend to go in that direction and we just, you know, shut down a lot of possibilities that can happen if we're not attached to any outcome. We're just present and listening and, you know, giving the other person, the client or friend, family member, whoever it is, our full attention.
Yes. I'm so glad. I feel like you've been working on that piece and like a constellation of other pieces around it as well.
Yeah.
And so beautifully said. Yeah, I'm so glad you're seeing that. Good. Rana.
I think for me, what I've noticed is that as I've become more rooted within my own energy, I'm definitely noticing how more people, whether that's in my business, my current clients, potential clients, and personal relationships, how folks are leaning more into mine. Mm-hmm. And what I really mean by that more specifically is I feel that they feel safer, more vulnerable, willing to be held accountable. And then, of course, that ups my game, as much as I kind of hate that word in this, you know. And the phrase that keeps coming back to me, and I've been using this a lot in my work recently, is that sacred reciprocity of exchanged energy.
Mm. Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. It is. It is a dance, right? And our clients' energy feeds us and vice versa. And I love what you're saying about the more grounded and rooted that you are, the stronger the container is. And you know, a piece of that is our physical bodies are part of our containers. So the more that we can be rooted and grounded, the stronger our physical containers are, and then the easier it is to hold that vulnerable, tight container with our clients. Beautiful, thank you. Kim is saying in the chat, it's been validating for how much I've always considered energetics within my work and how I naturally operate. Good, I'm so glad. Mindy's saying it touches all aspects of coaching, any relationship, it sets the tone for everything. Yes. Lisa is aware of how much energetics affect the space that we share. I love that phrase, the space that we share. Okay, so let's keep on going then. And all of you have already said this in the last few minutes, but first I just wanna kind of reiterate again, whether it's a 10-minute laser session with a workshop participant that you've never met before, or whether it's an ongoing client over years and years, the relationship between you and your client is the basis of everything. The relationship is the basis of everything. It's the most foundational piece. When the relationship is out of alignment and the energetics aren't tended to, that's when you end up with the leaky container, with frustration, with disengagement, with worry, with stuckness. When the relationship is aligned and the energetics of the relationship are tended to, because it is an ongoing, living, breathing thing, right? A relationship and energetics, it's not a once and done. When it's aligned and tended to, that's when trust is created, vulnerability, excitement, motivation, depth. And here's what I want us to take a look at. Next, if left unguided, what happens in the coaching container is a microcosm of what happens out of the coaching container in the real world. I'm going to share that in the chat and I'm going to repeat that again. Just get that in the chat. If left unguided, what happens in the coaching container is a microcosm of what happens out of the coaching container in the real world. So what this means is the following. If left unguided by you, the practitioner, if you have a client that is unsure of themselves in the outside world, they are going to very likely be unsure of themselves in the container and with you. If left unguided, if you have a client that tends to easily get angry at others, then in the container, that client is likely to easily get angry at you or themselves. If left unguided and you have a client that tends to compare themselves with others out in the real world, then in the container with you, they are likely to either compare themselves to you or to your other clients or other people in your community. If a client out in the outer world tends to have unrealistic expectations of themselves, then if left unguided in the container, they will either have unrealistic expectations of themselves or with you. So, in other words, there's a good chance that at some point in the coaching relationship, your client will unconsciously bring their own family and social dynamics and patterns into the relationship with you. They'll bring in the helpful dynamics as well as the not so helpful dynamics. So the more conscious your client can be of the family dynamics or projections that they bring, and the more conscious that you as a practitioner can be of them, then the more that together the both of you can use all of that for your client's growth and transformation, instead of those family dynamics and projections working against you together in the container. Does that make sense so far? Okay.
Joanna?
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Could you provide a more specific example of what that actually would look like when you speak to a familial dynamic or pattern?
I'm going to get to that.
Oh, great. Thanks.
Yeah. Give me like 2 minutes and we'll get there. Good question. Okay. So another way for us to look at this, and this is an important component of energetics, is that you want to be aware if your client is projecting parent, mother, father, brother, sister, authority figure, past teacher onto you. Now, there's nothing wrong at all if this happens, so long as you know what to do with it and how to navigate it. It doesn't mean that you've done anything wrong at all as the practitioner if these projections happen. It's natural for them to happen. And it's especially natural that for these projections to happen when an individual is in a safe space. That's why a lot of people tend to project family dynamics onto long-term partners. So if it happens, that doesn't mean that anything is wrong, but you do want to be aware of it and you do want to have strategies to navigate it. Because if you let it go untended, it does have the potential to eat away at the relationship and the container and then undermine client progress. If you know how to leverage it, then it actually becomes like pure gold for your client, transformational gold. So again, as I said before, what happens in the coaching container is a microcosm of what happens out of the container. Now, if this is true, if this statement is true, then what's also true is that if you, the practitioner, know how to navigate it, the coaching relationship can become a corrective and deeply healing opportunity for your clients around their family dynamics, their other relationships, and their relationship with themselves. What happens in between the goal setting and the strategizing and the questioning, you know, all the skills that we use in coaching, what happens in between can be just as powerful and motivating as the coaching skills themselves. In other words, the relationship between you and your client can be just as motivating and powerful as the actual coaching. So to answer Rana's question, let's look at some examples of how projections or family dynamics can show up for the client in the container. they may come in with a fear or a worry or a concern, and maybe one that they aren't even aware of fully themselves, that you, the coach, the practitioner, is going to judge them, right? If they got judged a lot in their family, they may have a fear or a concern that you're going to judge them. Another example of a projection or a family pattern or dynamic that a client can bring in: you don't love me, right? You don't love me for who I am. You don't think I'm valuable, or you don't love me as much as her, right? Especially if that happened with siblings and favorites or cousin favorites or things like that. Another example: you, practitioner, are making me do this, right? If someone, you know, in their family, their parents, they felt like their parents made them do homework, made them practice piano, made them be nice to guests, they may be projecting that onto you, even though they have hired you to help them create what they want, right? And do the thing. Here's another one. You'll punish me if I don't get it right. If I don't get this right, if I don't move fast enough, you'll punish me, or you'll be disappointed in me. You don't approve of me, or you don't approve of that thing that I did. That's another one. Yeah, Carlita's saying already she sees how she's been projecting onto her friends, right? It's not just into, right, practitioners we project this. These are projections all around. Here's another one. You'll betray me. You won't really be there for me, even though you've told me. Or you're inadequate when it comes to helping me. This is a big one for me, actually, that you're inadequate when it comes to helping me, that I have to be really conscious of when I hire practitioners. I've got this thing in my family where, like, I've always been the super, like, the savior of everybody else. No, you know, it always has felt like they haven't been able to help me or be there for me. And if I don't catch myself when I hire a coach or any kind of practitioner, I just like immediately assume that they're not going to be able to help me, really. They're inadequate in some way. You don't really have my best interest in mind, right? Sometimes we can feel that in families or communities or from teachers, right? They're manipulating us. They don't really have our best interest in mind. Here's another one. You need to save me. You need to save me. Or I need to save you, practitioner. I'm here to save you. Here's another one. You're just trying to control me. Here's another one. Well, we kind of already looked at this one, but not exactly in this way. You're going to get angry at me. I'm scared of your anger, and you're going to get angry at me. You're pushing me too much. You're too harsh. You're too strict. Here's another one. This is another one that I have to watch for myself. You don't really see me or understand me. You don't really get me. You don't really believe me. You're not paying enough attention to me. Right? And it's not that the client is actually saying this, right? It's not necessarily in spoken words. You're better than me. You think I'm too much. You think I'm too annoying. You think I'm too needy. You don't really like me. You're here because I pay you. And you need to be, but you don't really like me. I've seen, as I've been sharing all of these, some nods, some chuckles. I feel like some awareness coming through. So let's pause here and go a little bit deeper with it. What are some of the, for lack of a better word, we'll call them negative dynamics or patterns that you've had with your parents or primary caretakers? What are some of the negative dynamics or patterns that you've had with your parents or primary caretakers? Let's roll in around for you. Yeah, Rana, I can see these are, I don't know the different attachment style. I know a little bit about the different attachment styles. I can see what you're saying for sure. Take another moment with that one. Yeah, Mindy's saying you're going to disappoint me, so why try? I can't trust you. Yeah. I don't need you, Alana saying. Yeah. Jamie's saying competition and smarts and hyper need for safety, low risk tolerance. Yeah. All right, here's another question to consider. Well, Linda's saying being the peacekeeper, not rocking the boat. Yeah. Okay. What are some of the negative dynamics or patterns that you've had with your own sisters or brothers, if you've had them, or cousins, or stand-ins for siblings? What are some of the negative dynamics or patterns that you've had with siblings, cousins, other kind of kids in a community with you, or stand-ins for any of that? Great shares in the chat here. Tess is saying taking on limiting roles. He's the adventurous one. I am the cautious one. Being accused of trying to control. Not that you would ever do that. I withhold because I don't trust that they have the depth to really hear me. Rana's saying, just learn, sister says, just learn to keep your mouth shut. It's no wonder why no man wants you in his house. Yeah. Simona, I have the you don't get me one as well. Yeah. Stacy's saying hypervigilance. Yeah. All right, here's another question. What are some of the negative dynamics or patterns that you've had with teachers or authority figures? What are some of the negative dynamics or patterns that you've had with teachers or authority figures? Don't speak up. Sorry about that ringing. I'm not in my own house. Stacy's saying, I doubt them and challenge them to make a difference. Trying to please and seek approval. I get like that. I've had that with teachers for sure. Christina saying, do as I say, not as I do. Yeah, Libby's saying, in religion, your voice doesn't matter. All right, so taking all of this into consideration, and I'll open up for voice-to-voice shares in a moment too. But taking all of this into consideration, when you've been a client, when you've been a client, how have you brought your family dynamics or patterns into the relationship? So when you've been a client, how have you brought those dynamics or patterns into the relationship? This can be with any kind of practitioner, a coach or massage therapist, anything. And also into even this sacred depths, right? How have you brought that in with me? It's okay, I can take it, by the way. Jamie's saying all my bosses were my mother. So just to bring some awareness for yourself, right? How have you brought these family dynamics when you've been a client? Yeah, that you won't be able to help me attitude, having to really, really see that you can trust, needing the hard evidence of trust. A sense of don't tell me what to do, yeah. Libby's saying I don't speak up and engage much, stick to the headlines, yeah. I'll never be as good as. I'll be betrayed and shamed and abandoned even after all the love bombing has occurred. Feeling misunderstood and then wanting them to quick fix me. Yeah. Oh, and them wanting to quick fix me. Yeah. All right, and then last question for right now, if you've worked with clients, what are you starting to notice just through this conversation so far? And if you haven't worked with clients, you can think about your coaching partner if you have one in this program, or really any relationship in your life. What are you starting to notice? How have your clients brought some of their projections in? How have your partners, etc.? Mindy, you're asking if these projections are essentially filters. It's a good question. Yeah, I think that if it's helpful to think of it in that way, for sure, you can think of it that way. All right, I'd love to hear a couple voices on this. What are you seeing? What's coming up for you? What's feeling important here so far? Rana.
Oh, this feels like so incredibly timely. As I have a very long-term client, we've worked with each other pretty consistently for about 10 years now. And just last week, in some new work that's emerging between us, she came into this realization that she's got this massive avoidance and fear of what she called male rage, and how that pattern has affected her both personally in her relationships, with her health and her wellness and her weight, and also in her own family dynamics of other entrepreneurs, in a very male-dominated, multi-generational business. So this just feels incredibly important. And how she's taking action to step out of that avoidance. And I think one of the things that I'm noticing is that she's also said, like, I wish I could borrow some of your rage when advocating, you know, for herself. And I think the dynamics over these last couple of years in particular, especially around all the social justice pieces, this is definitely a theme that I'm seeing emerge. At least in some of my circles.
For sure. And we'll pick up on the, like, our energy, like her, this idea of her wanting some of your rage. We'll pick up on some of that a little later in this call, in a kind of interesting way, I think, that will together for you even more.
Super curious.
That up. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
Jamie, do you have your hand raised?
I don't.
Oh, okay. Mute you then. Who else? I'd love to hear another voice. What's coming through? What are you seeing? What are you noticing? What feels important? Stacy.
Yeah, it's just dawning on me now that when I hire a teacher, and I've even said this literally to one of my teachers, you know, I don't think you can make a difference for me. It's a very honest and scary thing to say, but what I'm seeing in my own practice with clients is that opposite side of that is I try so hard to make a difference for them. It becomes the opposite side of that equation.
Yeah.
And in the trying, I feel like there's a loss of what's really going on. I could be more present.
I know it's hard to kind of see that and bring awareness to all of that, but I'm so glad that you are, Stacy, because that's, now that you have that awareness, you can shift out of that, right? And show up with a different energetic around that. So I'm really glad that that's coming to light.
I had put that at the pinnacle of what I do for people, is make a difference for people. And if it's not that, then what is it?
That's a great breakthrough coaching question right there for you to journal on for yourself. Good. Anyone else want to share? Simona.
Hello. Stacy, I so relate to what you just said, and I'm going to share something that I learned from Shauna, my amazing co-coaching partner. And actually, there's so many people that have co-trained. It's just, I appreciate this community so much, because there are parts of me that are healing because people can hold the space really strongly. So Stacy, I would say what you can do more than helping it, more than anything, is holding the safe space, is what I have found. And I, because of that caretaking one sneaking in, I'll just share with you, I haven't fully healed from that. I probably will always have that a little bit, but one of the things that I've come up with is, I used to think it was rude, like if you see something, like to not take care of it, because like I was taught that like that's your responsibility, like that's what good girls do. But I realized like I've actually been reflexively reaching for other people's emotional turds bare fucking handed, and it's disgusting. So now I don't think it's my responsibility to reach for an emotional turd barehanded. It's my opportunity to take a moment and say, do I want to pick this up? Maybe it's in front of my house and I want to get a bag and pick it up clean. But like, I don't just reflexively reach for the emotional turd. And having that strong visual has helped my caretaker just ease back, because she no longer feels like she's a bad girl for not addressing what's right in front of her. She's like, oh, that was actually a misguided teaching. That was just someone taught me something that wasn't right. So if that helps anyone else, I share.
Thank you. I love that. And that's huge, Simona, that's shifted.
It's huge, because the first few coaching practice trades, like I was trying to fix things and the energy was icky. And so then it was like, I'm holding the space, and now the allowing is so much more there. So thank goodness I did that with trades and not with clients, because that would be super embarrassing. Yeah. But yeah, that's what's up.
Yeah. Good. Well, your share, Simona, and Stacy's share and a bunch of the other shares are bringing us into what I wanted to look at next, which is, as the practitioner, you are also bringing, well, if unchecked, you are bringing family patterns and dynamics into the relationship. If unchecked, you as the practitioner are bringing family patterns or dynamics into the relationship. And I apologize, I shared at the beginning of the session, I don't know if everybody heard, I'm not in my home today. And so if I can't control the phone ringing, and I'm so sorry about that. So I want to give you some examples for myself that I've had to really work on over the years, where I noticed that as a practitioner, I was bringing my family dynamics in. So one way that just floored me when I first realized it was in my family. I grew up with a mother who, on top of being a guilt-inducing Jewish mother, also has multiple sclerosis and has been very, very ill my entire life. And the convergence of all of those things created this dynamic in our household that kind of went like this. If you, Joanna, are not in constant contact with me, if you don't call me every day, if we're not always connecting, then it means that we're totally disconnected and you've failed me. And the first year or two of my coaching practice, I was like checking up on clients all the time. And if I didn't hear from them in between sessions, I thought they had disconnected from the container and they weren't going to show up for the next session or the, you know, like all the things, when really they just didn't need to be in constant contact. They didn't need that kind of attachment. They were all good. But I was the one that felt like they weren't, because we weren't in constant contact all the time. Another example, and this is one that I still catch myself in sometimes that I have to work on. Sometimes I just naturally assume that people hate me, like for no reason whatsoever other than I am intrinsically hateable, like very hateable. I have to watch that I don't bring that in to my client containers. Here's some other examples. Maybe for you, you've got a fear that people will get sick of you if they hang out with you too long. And so then that holds you back from asking clients to re-sign. Maybe you were played against your siblings a lot and you inadvertently kind of bring in some competition into your client containers. So if you haven't already looked at this through our inquiry today, take a moment with this one. How might you be bringing some unchecked family dynamics or patterns in as the practitioner? What are you seeing? What's coming up from you, for you? I'd love to hear a voice on this one. Karen's saying in the chat, I'm just a bother and not worth your time. Yeah. Tess.
Hi. I don't know if this is exactly what you're asking. What came up for me was being really aware of how I overcompensate for things that arise from a family dynamic. So I grew up with a mum who was very uncomfortable with extremes and wants everything very balanced and in the middle. And it also wasn't very confident socially and was quite quiet and shy. And through various relationships I had as I grew up, I kind of got way more confident in, like, now she would see me as like much more sociable. I've always developed more like lifelong friends. And so I kind of am aware in how I can almost go over the top with that, of like being super available to my friends and like super responsive. And now I'm kind of trying to overcompensate and not be like my mum. And then that can make me too available and friendly and wanting to be liked by people when it's a more client-based relationship.
Yeah, that's such a important awareness professionally and personally. Good. Okay. So the next question then is, so what do we do? What do we do with all of this? You know, particularly bringing it back to when our clients bring these into the container. Well, actually, I shouldn't even say particularly. You know, for us, what's most important is the well, Aunt, let me stop. What do we do? First thing, most important, awareness, right? So first for us as the practitioner to be aware if our client is bringing their projections in, for us to be aware when we're bringing our projection in. Awareness is huge. So first things first is our awareness as practitioners. And knowing that it's normal for these projections to happen. Then with the awareness and with our understanding that it's normal, then the very next thing, it's still with us, is for us to know that the projection isn't about us. The projection is not about you as the practitioner. It's just not about you. In fact, one of the things that I've really learned over the years, and this has been hard for me to really learn, is most of the time, the way a client feels about me, whether it's not so good or whether it's incredibly positive, this actually has very little to do with me. Okay, if it's positive, it has a little more to do with me, right? But really, it has very little to do with me. Except for when it does. Right? So just side note here, except for when it does. We don't want to assume that if a client feels that we're judging them or we're not showing up for them or whatever, we don't just want to like automatically assume it's not about us. We do first really want to check our filters. We want to check our privilege. We want to look and listen. We want to look at our own dynamics and projections, right? But really most of the time, it's not about us. When it is, we want to work to correct that, but most of the time it's not. Okay, so we are aware, we know it's normal, and then it's so important energetically, once we've checked the filters and we've listened and we've checked the privileges, it's so important then to know that it's not about us, because then we can be more grounded to navigate and to respond and to support our client with it. So then from there, next thing to think about is creating awareness for the client. Creating awareness for the client around the projection that they're bringing in or the dynamic that they're bringing in. And so this is right back to our creating awareness module, reflecting the truth skills, right? But I'll give you some examples for right now on creating awareness. So here's one example. You might want to share, you know, sometimes we can bring our family or early life patterns into the coaching relationship, and that's totally normal. When we do, it means that we feel safe enough in the relationship. That being said, I think I'm sensing that sometimes you worry that I don't approve of you. Which, by the way, is so far from the truth, but I wonder if that resonates for you. This worry that I don't approve of you. And if so, what relationship in your life does it remind you of? Right, so that's one way of reflecting the truth. There's a little bit of facting, consulting in there. Sometimes it's normal to bring some family patterns in. It means that we feel safe. and then reflecting the truth, not saying you think I don't approve of you, right? But I sense that you might, and I wonder if that resonates for you. And then from there, explore what relationship does it remind you of, you know, and you go further into that. So that's one way. And then I'll share another way. Sometimes, depending on the situation and the client and the relationship that you already have, you can also be more direct, if it makes sense in that moment. So as an example, I have a long-term client. She's been with me now for probably 10 years. And early on in our relationship, we had explored, because it came up in the container, and we had explored and looked at how as a child, her mother never really showed up for her. She always showed up late, or she didn't show up at all, or she wasn't really there for her. And that had come up a couple times in our relationship. So we had already looked at it and explored it. And somewhere, I don't know, a couple years back, maybe in our fourth or fifth year, after we had looked at it, it cropped up again. And I was a little bit more direct with her. The moment called for it. And we were in person. We happened to be in person at the time. And I looked at her with love, right? The energy was such love. And I said to her, I said her name, for now we'll call her Jen. I said, "Jen, I'm not your mother. I'm not going to forget about you because I'm taking a month off." It was before I took my month. I usually take a month off in August, right? And so I just said that to her with complete love, right? "I'm not going to forget about you because I'm taking a month off." And that was all she needed to realize what she was projecting onto me. This not showing up, it can be such a biggie. With both of my pregnancies, right before I gave birth, both times I had a couple of clients that were scared. "Oh, here's this baby is coming and I'm never going to see from you, you know, see you again. You're not really going to be there for me," etc. I once had another client. It was at a moment where my business grew in a very dramatic way, like a big quantum leap was taken in my business. And she started to fear that I wasn't going to be there for her because my business had grown, you know, this fear of not being present. So we want to create awareness. We want to reflect the truth and then explore it. From there, here's another. So usually, you create the awareness, you look at it, and that's really enough. You know, you don't need to do much more than that. But that creating of awareness is so key. You might want to, and you'll see as we look, get into Befriend Your Fear and rewiring negative thought patterns, you know, then you can do a Befriend Your Fear with it, or negative thought pattern with it, or use a rewiring negative thought pattern. You can use different techniques, but that creating awareness. So important. All right, let me pause there before we get to the next piece. What are you seeing? What feels important? What questions do you have? And Simona, yeah, I support you in your aspiration towards taking August off. All right. Any questions, any comments, anything that wants to be said about creating awareness for ourselves, knowing that it's not about us? checking our privilege and filters first, knowing it's not about us, and then also creating awareness for our clients. No? All right. So then let's keep on going, because there's another important piece to this. I'm going to repeat again what I said before. If it's true that what happens in the coaching container is a microcosm of what happens out of the container, then what is also true is that if you, as the practitioner, navigate things well, the coaching relationship can become a corrective opportunity. It can become a corrective opportunity for those dynamics, not just in the container with you, but outside of the container in the real world. So again, I always feel like there's two things that are very connected happening at once when we work with clients. There's the, like, we're working on this goal, we're setting this strategy, this is the vision, right? Like the content of what we're working for, but then always right underneath it is the relationship and how we're relating and how we connect and how we communicate. Both are so important, but it's that relationship and those energetics that not only are what really powerfully move the content along, but they have the opportunity to also support the client to just transform so much in general. So that being said, I want to share with you another piece that can really help with this, which is to preemptively bring healthy dynamics and patterns into the container. Preemptively bring healthy dynamics or healing dynamics and patterns into the container. So here's what I mean by that. One of my primary goals as a practitioner is to strive to be ideal mother, ideal father, ideal sister, ideal teacher, as best as I can. Not using myth of perfection here with the ideal, but to show up with the archetypal energies of ideal mother, ideal father, ideal sibling. And by the way, I'm gendering mother and father here, but if that doesn't work for you, just ideal parent. So as ideal mother, I strive to show up as nurturing, as accepting, as loving, as validating, as consistent. And all of this, the intention of all of this is to create a corrective experience for my client and a container where that really helps them move forward. As ideal father, I allow for mistakes to happen. I motivate in positive ways. I hold structure and boundaries in warm ways. I see the highest potential of my clients. and I get lovingly confrontational when necessary. Now, in my first years as a practitioner, I avoided showing up as ideal sister because of my own stuff around feeling like showing up as ideal sister would give me less credit in some way. But I learned from that after the first year or two. And so now as ideal sister, I don't put myself on a pedestal. I hold an energy of there's enough success to go around for everybody. I keep my own competitive impulses in check. I create an environment of full acceptance. I show that I enjoy my clients' company, that I genuinely enjoy being with them and like them. And when I first became a practitioner, I don't think this was as necessary as it is now, 20 years later. But at this point in the coaching and transformational industry, we also need to think about ideal leader archetype. Because a lot of leadership, unfortunately, has been abused in the industry. So I'll tell a quick story about this. Some of you may have heard this before because I shared it in the Sacred Power program, but it's worth sharing again because I think it's important. So many years ago, I was facilitating a facilitation training into the depths. In the in-person training, all about how to facilitate groups. And I was doing two retreats in a row. I had led a business retreat and then had a day off and then went into this really intensive facilitation retreat. And it was around the time of Halloween. And so we were doing a ritual one evening to honor the ancestors. And I modeled how to call in the ancestors. And we did this beautiful ritual of connecting with loved ones that we'd lost, communicating with them, etc. And then I was already so tired by the end of the night. I brought the circle to a close and I could just feel at the end of that circle that something wasn't right. Just something was not right. And on my car ride home that night, I realized what it was. I realized that I had called in the ancestors, but I had forgotten at the end of the circle to release them, to invite them to go. And I was like, oh, gosh. I went to bed that night. I woke up the next morning, came back to the retreat space. We all met together and there were 24 women there. We were doing just a check-in in the morning. We were all sitting in a circle and woman after woman was checking in, you know, and one woman was like, I couldn't sleep all night. I felt like there was a weird light in my room. And the next woman was like, I felt like my grandmother was there with me and it didn't feel good. It felt really creepy. And another one was like, I just felt anxious all night, you know, and I'm sitting there and internally I'm just like, oh shit. Like it's because I didn't release the ancestors right now. I was the leader of this group and I could have abused my power as leader and let everybody share and be like, well, that's just normal to happen. It's okay, right? And move on. And not told the truth of what had happened and how I had made a mistake. But that's not what I did. After everybody shared, I took a deep breath. I metaphorically put my big girl panties on I was sweating a lot. And I said, and I apologized, and I said, I have to tell you all something. It's not just coincidence or normal that so many of you had this anxious experience last night. I think it's because I made a mistake. I forgot to release the ancestors at the end of our circle. I am so, so sorry about that. And just by acknowledging it right now and that we release them, you know, they're released. And I said, if anybody has anything that they want to clear with me or is upset or, you know, needs to share, please do. I am here for that and for that conversation with you. And I cannot tell you how many women in that circle were in tears, not because I had made the mistake, but because it was the first time that someone, an authority figure, had admitted a mistake and apologized. And that experience alone was so important for them. So anyway, this is all to say, we want to think about what energy a client might need in any given moment. And we want to think about how to bring in energetically, archetypally, these corrective family patterns. So let me pause there because I know that's a lot. And we'll talk a little bit about how you can do that in a moment. But let me pause there. What are you seeing? What feels important to you here? What do you want to share? What questions do you have? I've been talking a lot, so I want to hear from you. Let me know. Simona.
So I want to just bring into this space something that so much of what you just said, like in this new chapter, like it's the first chapter. This new chapter about the archetypal energy is feeling both really resonating and a little bit not. And so I just want to name it for myself,
yeah,
in that my, and you might be getting to this like in your next section. So like, I want to just say to everyone,
no,
I just
don't, no need to.
My yeah. thought is I really try to always model what for others so that they can do it from them, their own inner wisdom, their own inner sage. Now, I'm not yet a practicing coach. Well, actually that's not true as of this week, but you know, so, but I'm a new, brand new. So I'm not coming from a place of coach experience. I'm just coming from my own inner belief system, which is that no one can be that for someone else, that they must be that for themselves. So to see it modeled and not given to it. Something along that is what's really striking me. Like you showing up as the archetypical mother, to me, the words to model for them so they can show up for themselves that way.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. Not to thank you for that correction, not to be that for them, but to bring that energy into the container for it to be modeled, but also for it to be felt as well, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Does that resonate?
Yes.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you for bringing that in. Yeah, I didn't mean like we're coming and doing it for them, but yes, for it to be part of the container so that it can be modeled as well as taken in. Thank you. Who else What else are you seeing, Tess?
Following on from what Simona said, just backtracking a little bit, when you were talking about the experience with your client, where you said, I can't remember the words, about I won't do something like your mother. What was the word you said over August? When you weren't, when she wasn't going to see you over August. And
she said, she's not your mother. I'm not your mother.
I'm not going to forget about you because
I'm not going to forget about you. And my instant response when I heard that was that that would be powerful to receive. And then I was questioning, oh, does that mean you're setting yourself up? Almost like Simona was indicating, like, I'm performing that role for you. And is it kind of creating a kind of dependence, or would I be going too far as a coach? And then when you brought in the question, the whole context of archetypes, like my mind was blown, because I then saw how you can, I think the words you said was you're giving someone an experience of that. And I just saw how this is just such a powerful way to offer those experiences to our clients whilst maintaining a real boundary, because we know that we're embodying the energy of that archetype and we're not blurring that boundary where I'm trying to be too much for that person and then
right.
you know, and the container gets leaky and all that kind of
completely
thing.
And so, right. It's not that you're
opened being... up this landscape is just like, wow, that's how this energy can occur, but there's still this beautiful, respectful, healthy boundary between the two participants in the container. That's
yeah, 100%, right, with the, and that is the ideal. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I feel like also some of the language you're using is deepening even more the beautiful point that Simona was bringing in, that there's a difference between being the mother for another person versus bringing in the archetypal energy mm-hmm. of it.
Those and I can have the confidence to do that if I know that I'm bringing in that energy. Yeah. Whereas if I wasn't aware of that, I would be more cautious yeah. and I wouldn't want to step into that place.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, good. Jamie.
Yeah, I was sort of over here with the corrective and feeling a little, the word caustic comes to mind, and that wasn't exactly it, but it was, you know, it was like that there's this coaching that has this verbal quality to it, like questions and answers and that sort of thing. And when you said what energy might the client need in any given moment, that shifted everything for me, which is like energy is right when it's what am I feeling, what are you feeling, what is spirit doing here in the room with us, you know, all of that. Then it the corrective like took on a whole new place. And I realized that dropping again into the feeling state.
Yes.
Is yeah. the place. Well, at least it's an entry point that.
100%. And this question of what's the energy mm-hmm. that is required here, right? Is there a tender energy that is being required here? Is there a bold energy that's being required here? So asking yourself, not just like, what are the words, but what is the energy that feels would be most helpful for my client in this moment?
Thank you. Good.
Anything else on this? Rana.
So I so appreciate what Tess brought forward in relationship to, and I might not be verbalizing this in the way that I want to, but having witnessed this myself in certain dynamics is where these embodiment practices, if you will, whether modeling that or bringing that energy, feels inc- there feels like there's just a whole lot of theatrics wrapped up into it, Joanna, quite frankly, where I have seen so much harm done as a result of the same. And where clients are left feeling completely bewildered by that experience.
Yeah, so what are you seeing now is the difference between that versus how we're talking about it today, if you are seeing a difference?
I think I need to feel into this a bit, because there's probably a whole lot that I could reflect on, you know, in that context, and just how important these energetics are, and when things can sometimes go wildly awry, yeah, when bringing in those archetypal energies.
So from your comment and from some of the other comments, I'm feeling like maybe I should get a little bit more, maybe I could be a little bit more clear on what I'm saying. So let me think about this for a moment and see if this helps. This may not be what you're referring to, Rana, so let me know.
Sure.
But
sure.
When it's done in those dramatic ways that cause harm, I'd be willing to bet a lot of money that the energy that it's coming from is some kind of unchecked pattern or projection or need or fear from the practitioner.
Yes, that is completely fair. And I can't help but wonder if a client is already in a vulnerable state, okay, and they're witnessing this, and maybe I'm overthinking this, and I'm willing to say that maybe I'm overthinking this a bit, of yes, just how important those energetics are. And if a client, quote unquote, doesn't have that awareness, isn't as attuned to the energy dynamics at play, what, and maybe this isn't going to get answered right this second, but what are some preemptive ways to address that, so as not to cause harm or even re-traumatize people?
Yeah. I might need your help from somebody else in the group, because I'm not 100, like, where, because I think where my mind is going to might not be the answer to your question. Like, where my mind is going to, and you can tell me, is like, so what I meant by energetics is if I'm with a client, here's an example, and I know they've just shared something really new and vulnerable with me, and it's a big deal that they've just shared that, I'm going to be just a little bit more aware than I normally am of holding a really nurturing space for them to feel really good about what they just shared, and then they just shared it, versus sure, going into a visibility hangover. Like my energetics are gonna meet that moment. There isn't even anything that needs to be said. You know, I don't need to say anything about how I'm shifting my energetics in that mm-hmm. moment, but I'm bringing my energy to meet the need of the moment.
Yes.
Does that make sense? And is that answering your question? It might not be.
it does make sense, Joanna, in terms of the context of what you just described, that happening in.
Okay.
And maybe if this is a question for another time, that's totally okay. But it, where I have seen, you know, a coach or a practitioner, you know, take on the embodiment of an archetype, if you will. Okay. And that is done in what feels like a completely bewildering culturally inappropriate,
yeah,
theatrical way. And I could go on and on and on.
No, right. No, I think I get it. I mean, I think what's important, again, for the practitioner is our energetics, like where we're coming from, checking our filters, checking our fears, checking our patterning, checking our privilege.
Sure.
I think well, maybe that's this is the just best safeguard for that.
Okay. Yeah. I'm like weaving some threads here.
Yeah. Muse on it some more. I want to get your question answered more fully. I'm going to take the next few minutes to just share a couple of other things, but I'm here afterwards and also like ongoing. I do, if there's more there for you, I want to get it answered.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay. So last pieces for today. So how do you show up in these ways that we've been talking about? So first of all, like I've said already a couple of times, check your own projections, your own dynamics, your own filters. Check to see that you are coming from a perspective of an equal playing field. Remember that it's not about you. The moment that you think it is about you is the moment you have less ability to show up in the ways that you want to. Love, love, love your client. So whenever I notice I'm being projected on, whenever I want to bring an energy, but it maybe feels a little hard, I remember to drop into my heart and love my client, really love my client. The more that you can stay grounded in your container, do your own inner work, take care of your body, the easier, even if you're having a crappy day, the easier it is to show up with the energetically as ideal mother, ideal father, ideal sibling. Okay. Okay, so let me share some homework for this week, and then we'll open back up for any last questions and takeaways. So you'll see this in your worksheet, but I just want to say it verbally. I want to invite you to track yourself this week, and really, and you can make a list of this as you track yourself. Find where in your relationships, whether they're coaching relationships or non-coaching relationships, where you're projecting, where you're bringing projections in. If you're working with clients and haven't already tuned into this, now that we've looked at this today, tune in a bit more. And see if you can notice subtly where there are always projections, right? Some we need to point out, some we don't need to create awareness around, but see if you can take note of projections that are happening. I want you to invite you to experiment with maybe bringing ideal parent, ideal mother, ideal father, ideal sibling into a conversation as it feels appropriate. You're probably already naturally doing a lot of it, but see if you can be a little intentional and play with it. And then you'll also get some journaling questions to go deeper with your own dynamics. Okay, so I am slightly worried that there is confusion around this bringing the archetypal energy in. If there is, or there's anything about that that's unclear, doesn't feel right, and also, like, you know, what is right for you may not be what I'm sharing too, right? But if there's anything around that, please share with me, let me know, all of that. We're at 4:30, so I can hang on for a few minutes now, if you want to share, or, you know, we can do it in the Facebook group, or, you know, be in touch. But just quick, before we wrap for today, I would love to hear one or two takeaways from our time together today. And of course, any questions that you have after that. But first, just one or two takeaways. What are you taking from our call today? What are you taking away? Mindy?
Just listening about all the different ideas about, or the confusion about the archetypal energy, for me, what was coming through and I'm thinking is that the bottom line is that the energy from these archetypes is just that, it's energy, which essentially is just is the essence of it. You're not actually being that. And that is my, you're just kind of bringing that flavor into the room. And that it's not a literal being of something. That is my understanding.
100%. Bringing in archetypal energy isn't being the thing. It's actually these archetypal, if we want to like go purely Jung, these archetypal energies are like hanging around like everywhere. They're in the collective unconscious. And we have the opportunity, and this is something I play on a lot as a practitioner, to harness that energy to bring it into the container for learning and transformation and impact. So that's absolutely 100%. We're not being it. We're harnessing the energy of the collective energy, focusing it into the container for its use.
It feels like it's a matter of naming it and then witnessing it. That's what it feels like to me.
Yes. Beautifully said. Thank you. Kim.
What came up for me, and I really appreciated all the different ways we looked at this, because more and more I'm feeling very grounded in ways that I've always approached this. And the nuances and the discernment that is required for us to use those energies effectively. And it reminded me of what you said about the always coach the who, not the what. And knowing like our relationship with our client, you know, I would be cautious in how I use energetics with a new client versus somebody that I am experienced with. And so the relationship is an important piece of that. And I also felt between the conversation with you and Rana, elements of knowing the survival self versus the healthy self, and which energy might need to come in for that. Because in a healthy self, the energy can feel very fluid and grounded back and forth. But if you're working with the survival self, it's a little bit of a minefield sometimes. And so proceed with caution, nuance, discernment, all of that kind of stuff. So it was great.
Yeah, beautifully said. And about the being cautious with new clients, I hear that. And again, like what I, you know, what I say isn't truth with a capital T, just something to think about. But the energetics are always there. They always exist, whether you're intentional about them or not. So if it feels right, I would invite you to not be scared or hesitant to be intentional about them or conscious of them, because they're there regardless.
They're always there. And it also ties into what you said about the modeling. Like a lot of the times when the clients are coming to us, we're well-versed in a lot of this stuff, but it's new language to them. It's new ways of being. And so it's not so much cautious. I actually want to use the word tender, like be tender with the new clients.
Yes.
Because you don't know, like they're learning, it's like putting on new clothes,
and
right?
It's a new container. It's exactly. The container isn't fully set yet.
Yeah. And so just having awareness of that brings it to the consciousness, because sometimes if you're working intuitively, you can kind of doubt yourself sometimes. But when we have these discussions, it really starts making what was intuitive become what is known.
Yes.
And I appreciate that. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. What a beautiful and rich discussion today. Thank you, everyone, for all that you brought forward. We'll continue kind of marinating on this. And as I said, as things come up, just let me know what you need. I'm thinking about all of you, and I will talk to you soon. Have a great rest of your day.